Oh my goodness, we are in February. It is a whole nother month of 2022, and we are going well. Hey Johnny, I have this radio thing going on right now. I did a show last week where I was like an old school radio DJ. We were giving away tickets, we were giving away crypto and NFTs, we were on the Polygon network, we were all over the place, as long as you answered the questions correctly over on cyber.fm. Can I do anything like that with the podcast?
Well, I reckon you can, and you, I'm going to start with, I want you to guess what this is.
That's a, ooh, that's either indigestion or a wild boar.
It's Year of the Tiger, you silly devil.
You're
It's
the
Chinese
tiger.
New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year. You're right. You are right.
Hai Fat Choi.
So I've never been able to keep up with, I think I'm a, I think I was born the year to rat. I don't know if the
Still have
rat is a good
figures.
thing and the tiger's bad or.
No, tigers. I thought you'd like my tiger.
It
Sounds good my end. Don't know if it travels across the pond though.
I guess it's, yeah, I mean,
I promise you it's not indigestion.
thank you for creeping up my night, and Jesus be with you.
So the reason we got
See,
all
I
these
could do it too.
animal The reason we got all these animal noises is, Chinese New Year, and it's going to be a very important one. And here we are. It's about 16, coming up for 1600 hours GMT on February the 4th. And they're probably just coming to the end of the closing ceremony of the Winter Olympics in Beijing. And there's two things that caught our eye. One is something that we have spoken about many, many times, and that is the new digital one, which is the new Chinese central bank digital currency. And just as a reminder, it is not run on a blockchain. It is basically run on a database owned and controlled and overseen and surveyed by the Chinese government. But make no mistake, this gives them a very, very powerful tool to be able to control their economy and their sort of 1.2, 1.3 billion citizens, because it's a digital form of payment. And I think it's going to have a very big impact. And given the extent and the reach of the Chinese economy overseas and the new Silk Road or the Belt and Road Initiative, wouldn't be at all surprised if we start seeing sort of tolls for bridges, motorways, highways, airports, ports, actually being paid in a digital currency, a digital one, and not the US dollar. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. But I say we've spoken about that before.
And I
But
would
the thing
say,
really, you're
I
gone.
was going to say, I think in all fairness, that's still going to be distributed ledger technology, right? Because you
Yes.
don't necessarily have to be a blockchain for the
Correct.
distributed ledger function.
Correct. I suppose the main difference we're trying to draw with a DLT, it can just be one entity. To be fair, a blockchain can be one entity, but most people tend to think of blockchains whereby there's a number of different nodes, a number of different computers, a number of different parties that, and there's no one person or no one entity that controls the whole of the actual technology, if you like, of the blockchain.
So it's a
Whereas with
singular.
singular, correct.
Okay.
But alongside that, and again, mainly the regular listeners, and I'm sure some of you know, we've got around about 20, 25% of our listeners here on cyber.fm who are based out in Asia. And I'm sure many of you realize, if you like, the challenges not only receiving emails and the like, and getting onto various different social media channels or search engines, it's there is the Great Wall of China. But there's also restrictions in other countries that their countries, for whatever reason, don't want you to go and be able to use things like Facebook or Google or LinkedIn and stuff like that. And in China, they've very much cracked down on cryptocurrencies. But whilst they've cracked down on cryptocurrencies, what they seem to be almost encouraging, and it's almost like government endorsement, well, certainly government endorsement for blockchain technology, having this week announced that cities like Beijing and Shanghai and sort of government sort of law services and tax, criminal trials, copyright, civil affairs, trade and finance, all of these, and there's 164 entities that the Chinese have actually listed, they want them to carry out trials using blockchain technology. And it's envisaged that those companies will probably be using blockchain technology in its sort of intended purpose, i.e., they will actually be independent, and they will be the sort of blockchains that perhaps we're more familiar with, that we've seen developed, and perhaps more akin to something like Ethereum, Bitcoin, so no one entity is controlling them. But what was particularly interesting, though, as reported by the South China Morning Post, was that China is planning to launch something called Blockchain-Based Service Network. And basically, BSN is going to be two blockchains. There's going to be an internal blockchain within China, and there's going to be an external one, which will be for outside of China. And going back to the title, before we start doing our sort of tiger noises, what we were talking about is, are we going to see two versions of digital intellectual property? And what we mean by that is, at the moment, most people will be familiar with the fact that you can put a wrapper, you can create your intellectual property. So it could be a song, it could be a picture, it could be a video, any one of those things. And you create a non-fungible token. And the idea of a non-fungible token is that it is unique, and therefore there's only one of them. And because of that, people are prepared to pay tens of thousands, if not millions, as you saw with Beebles, you know, coming up for a year ago, someone was prepared to pay 79 million for a digital representation of a picture. However, if you want to sell an NFT back into China, potentially you could find yourself having to go onto the blockchain-based network service, BSN, and create something which they're actually calling a decentralized digital certificate. So sorry for all these acronyms, but a DDC. And so an NFT in London, New York, Paris, circulating around the world on a variety of different blockchains. But if you wanted to get access into the Chinese market, it looks like you're going to have to turn that NFT into a DDC, and then you'll be able to have a DDC version, which is could be identical to the NFT within China. Gosh, I'm confused myself now, James. Does that make sense?
I'm envisioning a bridge. It's a bridge into China's blockchain-based service network.
Yeah, but it potentially is creating a different digital representation, because it won't be an NFT. They'll issue it as a decentralized digital certificate.
Right. Your NFT becomes a DDC for the BSN.
Yeah. And they're saying the cost of creating a DDC could be as low as a dollar. So it's going to be super cheap to actually do it, and potentially then access the Chinese market, which, wow, you know, it's 1.23 billion people. And we all know the Chinese have a passion and they love collecting things. So, you know, it could perversely give the whole NFT market another huge boost. You know, whether the Chinese want to buy, you know, some of the, you know, was it Bored Ape Yachts Club and, you know, some of the, and, you know, CryptoPunks and some of the stuff where we've seen, you know, you think, wow, they're going for such massive prices, but they've built up such a fan base. So it'll be interesting to see whether we do effectively see two versions of a non-fungible token, one circulating inside China on the BSN blockchain and the other one circulating outside of China as an NFT as we currently see it and as we currently know.
Hey, I say it makes it a bigger economy and provides more liquidity. I'll do it.
Yep. So attached to that was one of the other topics that we touched on this week, was looking at digital wallets and why we believe that you're going to see more and more of these digital wallets. And we were looking at, you know, if you go back, James, you've been involved in sort of digital assets and crypto and, you know, for, you know, a long time, a bit like myself.
I'm old.
And the whole process of opening up a digital wallet with, you know, 24 words and a private this and a private that, and think, oh my goodness, well, I've lost it, or where is it? And that whole user experience really genuinely has put a lot of people off. And even something relatively straightforward like buying an NFT, we talked about this before, if you remember, it's quite a laborious process. Because you, 9 times 10, you can't just use cash. You've got to go and open up a wallet. Then you've got to go and buy some cryptocurrency. And then you've got to put that cryptocurrency into, you know, another digital wallet, a bit like, I don't know, maybe in MetaMask or something like that. And then you can hopefully, you know, go on an auction and actually hopefully you'll get some. But if you don't, you may end up paying transaction charges. You just have the pleasure of not actually being successful. It's not an easy process. But what we're beginning to see are digital wallets coming much more into sort of the mainstream. And so what we gave a definition from an outfit in the US called Bankrate. And they say digital wallets are exactly what they sound like, a digital version of your financial accounts, accessible via a computer, smartphone, that eliminates the need to carry around an actual wallet. So in more simplistic terms, you know, things like Apple Pay, Google Pay, Samsung Pay, these are all examples. But now we're seeing, you know, the likes of sort of PayPal and Venmo, but PayPal in particular. Really interesting to see how this payment platform, and that's all they were really, now very much, you know, taking out or taking on the services of some of the banks and the credit and debit cards that they were there originally to perhaps support and run alongside. But you've effectively got a digital wallet. And as people will know, you know, the Visa, MasterCard, PayPal in particular, have all said, we will start accepting digital currencies. So effectively, they've upgraded their electric wallets into digital wallets. And the difference is that with a digital wallet, you can then start, you know, receiving monies via smart contracts, or even using your digital wallet as the host, where you can then have smart contracts take money to pay for goods and services. And we're going to touch on some of this stuff with Hayden Jones, who's coming up after the break from PwC, and looking at how businesses really need to start transforming from the inside out. So rather than saying, oh, let's use, you know, digital money as a way to improve our payment services. No. Let's actually look at what we do at sort of grassroots level, and how do we actually have our systems and procedures and processes so that we can become super efficient. Oh, we'll need to use a digital currency, but that isn't the reason for changing it all. The reason is to actually really drive efficiency, prove our ESG credentials, and cut costs, and hopefully make things a lot more accurate. So the digital wallet is going to be absolutely essential, not just for businesses, but for individuals, you know, going forward.
Yeah, and it's also going to open up a lot of conversation about cybersecurity, you know, the hot wallets versus cold wallets. You've got the maximalists, right, that'll tell you, if you, not your keys, not your crypto. But we are going to, I would agree that we are going to rely on companies like PayPal, Venmo. I remember years ago, even, you know, on Wall Street, you know, I'm still selling, you know, baseball cards or whatever, you know, got a friend of mine would be like, oh my God, I want to buy that. Then it's like, okay, PayPal me. Because it was, in our eyes, it was an email that you were sending the money over. So as they you make it easier and more seamless, I would say that's an absolute necessity just for the mainstream wide adoption of crypto itself. And then also hardcore people, we can always have our cold wallets, our decentralized finance, you know, I'm in control.
But it was interesting, part of doing the research, we found out that Robinhood, which is an online stockbroker in the US, which has been phenomenally successful with over 20 odd million customers, they have announced that they're going to bring out their own digital wallet, and have already got 2 million people registered to say, well, when you do open it, can we have one? But all of this pales into complete insignificance when we look back finally at China. And already the Chinese have issued 260 million digital wallets. And there's the Chinese were rumored to be insisting that certainly within inside the Olympic Village, you couldn't use anything else apart from their new digital currency. Although there has been some pushback, we understand, because certain countries are saying, well, no, we don't want our athletes being tracked and monitored and seeing every single thing that they're spending money on. That's, you know, that's real state surveillance. That's not what we want. And I think therein lies the rub. Whilst we're very passionate about the technology and the efficiency and the transparency that digital assets and blockchain can bring, I think we need to temper our enthusiasm and remember that if you're not careful, you know, a bit like a video camera, it's great to have a video camera to make sure people aren't jumping the traffic lights, or, you know, perhaps in vulnerable places like dark alleys and stuff like that. But, you know, do you want a video camera, you know, in your bedroom? Well, chances are most people wouldn't. And in the same way, you know, chances are most people outside of China don't really want the government to know every single pound, shilling, pence, cent that you're spending, who you're spending it with, where you're spending it. But that's what's going to happen potentially in China. They will have a very, very rich seam of information and data over their citizens, certainly over the 260 million and rising number of wallets, you know, where the money's come from and where the money's going. And that's what I mean about they've got a new tool to give them control over their economy in a way that they've never, ever had before. And look out for the shadow economy. Look out for the black market. Look out for the informal economy, which, again, we've spoken about before. But it does account, on average, for about sort of 12% of the world GDP. In some countries, it's as much as 70%. And digital currencies give the governments a really powerful tool to actually crack down on that and get the taxes that they want to collect, and really stop some of the nefarious activities of maybe drug running and gun running and prostitution and child labor and all the other things which, you know, most people abhor and say, well, that isn't what we want in our society. But difficult control, but a digital currency will go a long way to actually helping that. And therefore, you need a digital wallet to be able to be part of that economy.
Yeah, and don't forget, what's shocking to you is not necessarily shocking to somebody else, right? So,
very true. We're not here to judge. We're not saying what they're doing is right or wrong, but we just want to point out the extremes on, you know, on either side of the spectrum, and people can make their mind up where they're comfortable.
Like you said with the Olympics, a part of me wants to go, you know what? Don't worry. What are you going to buy that you're afraid of? Go do your sport. Enjoy the moment, right? Why cause more issue? If you don't live there and you're not used to it and you're a little bit shocked, open your mind up, play soccer, do what you got to do. Sorry, football. Football, right? Do what you got to do.
My dear boy, football.
I'm learning. But then you get out and you go home and you're back into your comfort zone. A lot of this might be very comfortable for China. I don't know.
You don't know. We don't. And we're not here to judge. That's not our role. Okay. So, James, as you know, as the regular listeners know, you know, Digital Bytes is really a weekly analysis where, you know, I look at some of the different things that are going on in different industries and different jurisdictions, as we've touched on today. What we're really trying to do is just give people a flavor for some of the different ways and how and why and where blockchain technology and digital assets are being used. If people want to get a copy, we send it out every Wednesday from the UK, Wednesday morning. So happy to forward it out and then come on the show once a week on the Digital Byte Show on cyber.fm. And that's broadcast all over the world. So we'll be back next week. But coming up after the break, we've got our guest this week is Hayden Jones from PwC. And he's posed the question in his article about cryptos. And, you know, as he's saying, you know, where is crypto going? So look forward to chatting to Hayden, a closet rocker, coming up after the break.
I was going to say, I think crypto is going the way of music, the way it should be.
Is it Cyber FM?
It is.
Cyber.fm.
It could be anything John Waite wants it to be.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
right?
My God. Yeah, here we go, that one. Hi, this is John Waite, and you're listening to Cyber.fm.
Can I call you Dad?
No.
Hey, guys, as promised, we are back. Me and Johnny Fry over at Digital Bytes Podcast. And as usual, for the beginning of February, we brought over bigger name, I think. If you ask my opinion, PwC is something that everybody knows. Johnny, you brought your friend Hayden Jones.
Yeah, delighted that Hayden's joined us. And as you may remember, James, Hayden kindly came on the Digital Bytes show about a year ago when we were broadcasting with Pierre at Blockchain Radio. So Hayden, great to have you on the show with Cyber.fm, and happy to introduce you to James, who's my co-host.
Yeah, it's a circle of life.
And no, it's great. Yeah, it's great. Great to be here. And obviously very sad to hear about Pierre's news. Very sad indeed about that. But yes, no, it's always good. Always good to be with you, Johnny. And look forward to chatting with you over the next couple of minutes.
Yeah. Right. So, Hayden, just before we came on air, we were just reminding you of the sort of how Cyber.fm started, which many of the listeners will be aware. But essentially, just the potted version is that James started the radio station about 14 years ago. And there were a number of sort of music and rock bands that used to work for different security houses on Wall Street. And after the sort of 2008 sort of crisis, that a lot of those bands were disbanded. But James and some of his colleagues got together and said, no, we want to carry on, have a venue for these people and this music. And that was the basis of Cyber.fm. Now, what I didn't realise that actually you might be working for an old fuddy-duddy, stuffy PwC, very serious, doing a great job, up as holding standards, but you're a rocker on the quiet, you just told me.
That's very true. That's very true. Somewhere on the internet, you'll find various creations of my musical endeavours.
Oh, musical endeavours,
yeah. But Andrew Sentence and myself, so Andrew Sentence, actually, former chief economist of the Bank of England. We've worked on stuff together, which is great. But I have had the great pleasure of playing with Nick Mason previously, and also Chris Slade from AC/DC, which is great fun. I've spent nice.
You're a name dropper.
Oh, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. But anyway, we're here to talk about other.
Where is crypto going?
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, as with all these things, I spend a large amount of my time trying to make sense of what's going on. And because it's not a static market, it's not a static technology. It's always changing in terms of the way you think about it, and the way you see it. I'm asking the question, we've got over 17,000 cryptocurrencies out there.
Wow. Ignoring all the NFTs and all
Yeah, absolutely right. So, and then we've only got like three, four CBDCs out there. So we've got China's launching this month as well. And I'm trying to ask the question, what is going on? Where is all of this going? Interestingly, Fidelity Digital Assets came out with a note this week all about the investment case for Bitcoin, which interestingly is saying the same sort of thing that I was saying, that there is a strong case, based on your own appetite for risk, but there's a strong case for Bitcoin on the basis that it works. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's sound, it's established, it's robust, and we can all understand, well, it's a sort of a digital form of gold. As for the other 17,000, and the point that Fidelity are sort of making in their note is that they're all variants of some form of Bitcoin. They're all trying to do other things slightly better than Bitcoin. But actually, I'd argue that they're not really delivering anything that's particularly different. They've taken it apart a bit. They can see the sort of the store of value, the payment, the ledger. There's a conditionality component in there. But the needs to be a level of enterprise acceptability in terms of actually taking this technology forward and actually building organizations on it. And I think that's where the big issue is, because there's this sort of corporate respectability piece that I think we've got to navigate, which again is a function of sort of regulation.
Okay, so hang on, James Hayden. What I haven't told the listeners is that not only do you work at PwC, formerly, as you've alluded to, you worked at the Bank of England. You're a trained lawyer. You, as I well know you, you pick your words carefully. So what do you mean by enterprise acceptance? There's loads of companies that have bought Bitcoin or don't like Bitcoin. What do you mean by enterprise acceptance?
Well, if we... there's so much more, and I refer to it as a technology, but there's so much more that we can do with this technology, okay? Bitcoin is a ledger, and it's a payment system that has a store of value on it, okay?
Right.
We can add in conditions to the transfer of value. If you take any organization at its boundaries, you've got suppliers delivering things in, and you've got customers that get things at the other end, so goods and services coming out the other end. In the organization, you have a ledger and you have payment systems, okay? But they're two very separate things. So Bitcoin gives you a ledger, a payment, and a store of value, okay? We can add in conditionality to it, okay? With a bit of cleverness, it's a bit difficult. But you get three rails in one in Bitcoin. In the case of
those three rails being what then? Just to make it really clear.
So ledger,
yep.
Payment,
yep.
And store of value. Okay. So within Bitcoin, you've got those three rails, if you like, within one. Okay. And we can add in conditionality. Okay. Because it's difficult in Bitcoin, and that's what Ethereum does. It addresses the conditional transfer of value.
Smart contracts.
Exactly right. Exactly right. But in organizations are essentially doing exactly the same thing. They're moving value outside through payment systems. They're recording that transfer of value on ledgers. Okay. And that transfer of value at the perimeter or at the boundaries, so with your suppliers and with your customers, that transfer of value is governed by contracts. But all those contracts are all paper-based. Okay. So hang on, I look at this and I said to myself, well, Bitcoin is very clever because it's all done in code. It's brought all of those things together and it all operates nicely. What we need is to take the sort of the magic that is Bitcoin, and this isn't about running a large corporate on Bitcoin, but it's about rewiring, replumbing the inside of an organization in such a way that the ledger and you have payment and you have store of value can all move reference to gates, the contracts that you have with your suppliers and with your customers. And that's where you get real efficiency opportunity, because you get three for, you effectively get four for one, because you get your store of value, you get your payment, you get your ledger, and you get your contracts. Now, what interesting challenges is, and I make the points in the notes, that the cryptocurrencies, as wonderful as they all are, they're all outside of the traditional enterprise, okay? They need to get into the traditional enterprise. How that's going to happen, I think, and we come back to sort of, you know, enterprise acceptability. There has to be this sort of link up between the ledger world and the store of value world, okay? And I mean that in a sort of an enterprise sense. So we need to think about, you know, the big ledger providers that there are out there, but all, you know, they're moving numbers. But if those numbers were actually store of value, that gives you a payment system. Okay, so you're then into the territory of some really exciting transformational tools to drive efficiency. And then we get our law friends involved, and then we start coding contracts that run on those ledgers, and they subsist within the organization. So you're talking about software that runs commerce for businesses in a very, very different way, in a very integrated way.
Okay, so we begin, I like this concept. So you, are we beginning to see some early signs of this with the likes of PayPal announcing that they're going to be accepting digital currencies, as indeed Visa and MasterCard? And if you look at the growth of US dollar C, which is Circle, are we beginning to see cryptocurrencies in different formats, not just Bitcoin, beginning to be used as part of the infrastructure? Do you think that's what's going on?
Well, I think we not to be honest with you, Johnny, not really. No, I think okay. I think it's the challenge is within organizations. It's within the enterprise that we've got to get to. It's not about adopting what we've got externally. It's about rewiring what's internal to the organization.
So the organizations have got to transform, not just use these tools. They've got to, rewire, reconfigure, reprocess the systems that they're using.
Absolutely right. So I sit in procurement, for example. I need to pay a supplier. If I can see the goods have been delivered, okay, but at the point of delivery in the loading bay, that should automatically release payment via something like a stablecoin that's referenced against the CBDC, for example, so that the payment's automatically released. So I then do away with my payment. I don't need my payments team anymore. I don't need Nostro reconciliations anymore, actually, because I can be sure that my smart contracts are operating correctly. So everything should settle perfectly. I can issue a suite of electronic contracts that my customers can sign up to, so that when I deliver goods and services to them, those contracts automatically execute. So there's some fundamental, you know, re-engineering of the boundaries. So the inputs, so where you supply, and the outputs, where you deliver services. And then at those boundaries, you know, you have true digital contracts that reference ledgers and systems that are actually moving store of value.
Okay, so how do companies start this process? Because they can't come in on Monday morning and say, right, brand new system, throw away everything that we had. Where do you see the baby steps they need to take along this sort of transformational journey?
Well, if we take, I mean, procurement's a good place to start. You should have a good understanding of the commodity sort of items that come in. So things like pens, paper, pencils, you know, inks, toner, printer cartridges, all of that lot. Really important commodity items, relatively easy to automate. But, you know, the frictional overhead, the frictional cost of processing that those transactions doesn't add any value. So let's reduce it to as close to zero as we possibly can. So procurement's a good place to start. And then similarly, you know, your customers are paying for the inefficiency in your infrastructure. Okay. So again, you know, select a group of customers that you're delivering a known set of services to that we can automate that whole transaction flow. It's not rocket science. It's all of these ideas have been out there for 20 years. Just somebody needs to start to put them together.
Right. Right. And as you're saying, you know, going back to your thing in terms of when goods are ready for dispatch, relatively straightforward and very cheap now to apply some sort of Internet of Thing. So that you're waiting for someone to actually sign a document or press a button, you know, as soon as it leaves the periphery of the factory or the office, then you say, fine, automatically something gets triggered.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's a very, very neat ESG overlay onto this as well, because Bitcoin is a provenance machine. If I send you know, Bitcoin, we can see where it's come from and we can see where it's gone to. Similarly, if I ship you, you know, some cobalt, we can see where it's come from. And then as we work through all the different transaction flows, and if everybody's writing to the sort of same sort of external mirror ledger, we can use it as an ESG capability as well to sort of, you know, increase transparency of where goods come from.
So, yeah. So in the example you obviously give me, cobalt, it's a key component for electric.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And therefore, in the past, there were concerns that it was child labor or certain countries were exploiting people. And obviously, you know, any manufacturer wants to be able to prove to their customers that they're from sustainable sources. Hayden, fascinating.
Yeah,
I know I could keep on chatting away. I'm very fortunate. You and I do spend, you know, we probably talk at least a couple of times a week on a variety of clients that we're working on. So, James, I won't hog the line anymore. Any thoughts that immediately spring to mind with your good self?
Yeah, like you said, it probably costs us another hour, and I don't want to do that. You know, it's funny. I always find myself stuck, right? We can't shill some project, right? I'm not going to go say, oh, go buy Joey's Coin because Joey's Coin does X, Y, Z. But I'm stuck where I have to only use ourselves as an example. And I don't want people to think we're shilling ourselves either. But Hayden touched upon something to do with organizations, you know, not just the cryptocurrency, but the ledger itself. And I kind of feel a little vindicated because, as you know, you're actually helping us out a little bit. We're trying to work out where we, you know, CyberFM is a performance rights organization called DL Pro, right? The radio network is just a beta test for the product that we're rolling out blockchain-wise. This is where I feel vindicated because even though we have our own token that's going to pay the artists and become a currency and have liquidity, all that fun stuff, we are actually crossing those chains. The actual logging of the performance rights will be embedded in the Bitcoin version. I guess, is that the right thing to say? You know, the OG blockchain.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great word, that. Great term.
So when the artists are logging in to check that, like you alluded on, there's no auditing, there's no middlemen, right? The payments are going to be automated, and then the Bitcoin chain will be logging the amount of streams, plays, the payment that was processed, and the musician will decide.
The loyalty tokens that the listeners get?
Well, this is for the radio, the artist side, the musicians.
Yeah.
Because that's where the controversy really comes in. But we had decided that by using OG Bitcoin for not the currency, but the store of value for their data that makes or breaks their life, there was no need to create a new system.
Yeah, but as Hayden's saying, you've kind of done it from the inside out and reconfigured the business model, you know, that's really what Hayden's advocating. Well, you can't just use a token or one of the 17,000 cryptocurrencies and think you'll derive all of the efficiencies just because you've changed the method of payment.
But you're absolutely spot on in describing what you've just described there, because content delivery is a great use case, okay? But instead of delivering data, which is the framework that you've just described, what you're delivering is physical goods, so bananas or cars or cobalt, okay, or services. But you don't, and the clever thing is, at its limit, you don't need your own general ledger, okay? What you need are smart contracts that you spin up on it, that you point in the direction of your suppliers and your customers. And then you just need a fulfillment engine that's triggered by the smart contracts. And what you've described is an ultra high efficiency, very lean content delivery model that does exactly the same as what a large global consumer goods company does, takes things in, turns them into something else, ships them out.
Yeah. So we just became best friends.
Well, we need to
only because he's a rocker, James. You're a sop. Any rockers you love, I know that.
We got to start a band.
Yeah, right. It's going to be on my Tuesday show coming up next. It's Hayden Jones rocking in the free world.
That's a great song. Actually, I've played that. So I was listening to it the other day. It's an excellent song.
We got to throw a Neil Young controversy joke in here somehow.
Absolutely. Right. Well, James, we better wrap the show. Hayden, how can people get hold of you? Best bets on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, Hayden Jones on LinkedIn. So I can be found there 24/7, 365 days of the year. So always a pleasure to hear from people.
Brilliant. And that's Hayden, Haydn.
Like the composer.
Like the composer. Absolutely. Well, James, thanks very much. Another great show. And if anyone wants a hard copy of Digital Bites, then please just contact either James Tiley at cyber.fm or myself, Johnny Fry, JONNYFRY, also on LinkedIn. And we'll happily put you on the list to receive it. It's sent out every Wednesday morning, London time. So, James, that's about it. Thanks very much again. Thank you, Hayden. And we'll be back on the air next week with another edition of the Digital Bite Show.
That's brilliant. Take care, guys. Good to be with you as always.